right, you heard the jingle, so you know where you are. WHBC, Garden City, New York. And welcome to the American Hip Radio Show.
Surfing since it's our 5 way p.m. into 5 o'clock.
That's right. Look at you go. Hanging thin. Eddie Morales Ryan and Tom Ryan here. Folks, how y'all doing? Going to bring you another hour of music. And for this show, I think what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some stuff that's really, really old.
Great.
We haven't gone back to 1963 in a while. So I wanted to make a list of some hits, you know, that were from the summer of 1963.
What'd you come up with?
50 years ago. The thing is, like, these songs, they're a lot older than they sound. Like, they don't sound 50 years old to me.
Oh.
Which is maybe a good thing. That's, I mean, my God.
Maybe just wishful thinking on your part, but okay.
Right, or just, you know, I'm still stuck in the past because I'm a geezer. I mean, but John Kennedy was president when these songs were on the radio.
Well,
that's crazy. You know, like, American culture is obviously a lot more innocent, you know, in these days. You know, rock and roll was already on its way out, sort of coming back in because the British invasion was going to slam it back on our faces. And, you know, the Beatles changed everything. But this show is going to focus on what American music sounded like before that invasion. The summer of 1963. Just to start with a few hits. We'll start off with the Chiffons, a perfect representative of, like, what the girl group thing that was going on. Really, that's what was really huge before the Beatles hit. And if any of the girl groups got revenge on the Beatles, it was the Chiffons. Because, I mean, look at it this way. Before the girl group trend started, women represented somewhere between 10 and 15% of the artists on the pop charts. By 1963, with the girl group trend at its peak, girls or girl groups accounted for 40%.
Whoa, Nelly. It
almost tripled in size. Then the Beatles came along and almost completely killed the trend entirely. So the Chiffons are the group that got even eventually when they were able to sue George Harrison to take He's So Fine back from his song when he wrote My Sweet Lord. They get all the money for that now. That goes straight to the Chiffons. Here's the song, My Sweet Lord. I mean, excuse me, He's So Fine by the Chiffons. Thanks for calling, Rita. But if you remember that, you're old.
No, don't say that. That's not polite about saying that about a lady.
It's just, you can't not, you got to face facts. I mean, this stuff is, it goes back, it's 50 years old.
You have to have some decorum.
Like I said, oh, okay. John Kennedy's been dead for, 50 years now? 49 and change. Just saying. Anyway, that's the Chiffons.
Keep it to yourself.
A girl group from 1963. I'm not saying how old anybody is. I'm just asking if they remember the songs. That's all. Andy Williams, another sign of like how old these songs are.
My boyfriend.
Imagine a time when Andy Williams was cool. You know, I mean, that's almost hard to believe. But in 1963, that was more or less the case. And well, actually, maybe it was because he was just singing a cool song here. I mean, it's written by Doc Pomus and Mort Schumann.
Right.
Obviously, great songwriters.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't really think Andy Williams could have been seen as cool because he was actually on Columbia Records for a while. And Columbia Records is the label that, you know, started the attack against rock and roll. They figured that if they had enough people like Andy Williams on their
they charts. They were bound to win.
Right. It didn't tell that to the Beatles. Didn't work out that way. But this song did go to number two in 1963. And I still love this song. It's great. I love the little pizzicato string thing that's going on. Andy Williams with Can't Get Used to Losing You.
Guess there's no use in hanging around. Guess I'll get dressed and do the town. I'll find some crowded avenue, though it will be empty without you. Can't get used to losing you no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through loving you. Call up some girl I used to know. After I heard her say hello, I couldn't think of anything to say. Since you're gone, it happens every day. Can't get used to losing you no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through loving you. I'll find somebody, wait and see. Who am I kidding? Only me. 'Cause no one else could take your place. Guess that I am just a hopeless case. Can't get used to losing you no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through loving you. I can't get used to losing you no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through loving you.
Andy Williams, still like that song. Great cover version of that that came out in the early, mid-80s or thereabouts by the English Beat.
Right. You'll have to listen to the 80s show.
Yeah, I'm sure Jamie plays that from time to time. She probably gets gets around to playing some English Beat tracks, which that's a great band. Now, I'm talking about how long ago this is, how old this music is, because there's all these signposts that are like in my face. But imagine a time before Marvin Gaye ever even had a top 40 hit. That's
when,
how old
when
it is.
When was that?
1963, because this was the very first time he hit the top 40 with this song in the summer of 1963. Marvin Gaye with Hitchhike.
I'm going to Chicago. That's the last place my baby stays. Hitchhike.
If you're listening to AM radio back in around this point in time, 50 years ago, that might have been the very first song you ever heard performed by Marvin Gaye. Stubborn Kind of Fellow came out before it, but it didn't chart well. It did not make the top 40. So that was the first time that he actually hit number 30, actually. So he, you know, got pretty far up on the top 40. But still fairly modest considering what his career eventually did become.
I guess this was that was popular when they were doing all the song dance craze songs.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Big part of that.
Apparently that was a dance reference called
The Hitchhike. Yep. And that's exactly, you know, Motown was still searching for as many hits as they could get. And, you know, that was Marvin, you know, basically Marvin's way of jumping on the bandwagon there. And it worked fine. Another person who was doing that same sort of thing around this time was Gary U.S. Bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm bringing that up indirectly because, you know, he would do things like, you know, some twist knockoffs thing. That's the guy that did New Orleans and, you know, hey, yeah, and all that stuff. Well, he had this guy named Frank Guida, I think is how you pronounce his name, who was sort of acting as like a bit of like a producer manager for him. And he was digging up a bunch of songs. And there was some sort of I guess it was like a calypso-based or Caribbean-based sort of material that they were looking for. And he had come up with a couple of tunes that Bonds rejected, turned them down.
Okay.
So now they could have just moved on. But I guess this guy, Frank Guida, just really believed enough in the material that he wanted to find somebody else. So there was this guy named Jimmy Soul, who had been actually credited for being a preacher at the age of 7.
Just wow.
To believe, known locally as the Wonder Boy. And Frank, awesome. You know, knew this guy. So he said, listen, why don't you try singing this stuff? So, you know, songs like Twistin' Matilda was one of the songs.
Oh, boy.
That really didn't go anywhere. But amazingly, goodness. This one did. In fact, it became a number one hit. I'm sure that Gary U.S. Bonds was kicking himself very hard because he never had a number one hit. So
dang it
must have been crazy for him to think that the song was basically literally put on a platter in front of him, handed to him, and he said, nope, no thanks, and then watch Jimmy Soul go to the top of the charts.
Yikes.
The name of that song was If You Wanna Be Happy.
If you wanna be happy for the rest of your life,
funny. I never really thought of that song as anything other than like an upbeat soul song, but it's definitely got that Caribbean lilt all over it. The attitude as well in the lyrics.
It's got kind of a little steel drummy sort of a sound in the background there.
Definitely. It sounds like something that Harry Belafonte could have done at one point in time.
Easily.
You know? That's Jimmy Soul, If You Want to Be Happy. Number one song from 50 years ago. Pretty incredible. Now, you know our theme song on American Hit Radio.
Yes, I do.
Play it all the time. It's actually my own band, a recording of my own band from maybe, oh boy, how long ago did we record that? Speaking of a long time ago. More than 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, sure. Okay. We recorded that theme song. And it's just been floating around. And one day, I guess, you know, when I knew that we were going to be doing this show, you know, you need a theme. So I figured, okay, take one of my own. A nice homegrown number of an instrumental that we did. Our version of Pipeline. Well, the original version is 50 years old now.
Wow.
It was by the Shantays. What's really cool, I mean, surf music was another one of those things that got, you know, slammed to death by the Beatles. But the Shantays were like really some of the original purveyors of the surf music sound. First of all, these guys were 13 to 17 years old when this record came out. Talk about music being a young, you know, the kid's game.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. You know, nowadays you can get away with trying to put out a record if you're in your 50s. I don't think that would have been physically possible in 1963. And I really don't. I don't think that would have even been a remote possibility.
I think the Big Bopper was probably one of the older guys.
And he was like 30.
Rock and roll.
Maybe he was 28. You know, he was really not that old. It's kind of crazy. But, you know, these guys, like, I'm 13 years old, and they're not, you know, like a kiddie group. They're, you know, a genuine surf group. And what's really cool about it is that they actually recorded this song in the back of a surf shop.
You know, to make it even more authentic.
Right. They wrote the song and they said, oh, we also just recorded here. This is where we're hanging out. So they recorded it in the surf shop. And, like, you know, I guess later on when somebody wanted to remaster this stuff for digital stuff, they couldn't find the master. They ended up going back to the surf shop.
It was in there?
And it was there.
That's nuts. Luckily, the shop was still there.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here's that original recording by the Shantays, number four, 50 years ago. And the original version of our theme song. Here's Pipeline. Wow, memories. So much of this stuff. It's incredible what happens. I mean, the stuff, there's a great example of a song, actually, that is 50 years old, but it still sounds great to me. Okay, our theme song is what it is, and yeah, it's my right. band playing this, you know, ridiculously loud and fast and
your
updated version of it.
Yeah,
rocking it out. It's kind of cool to hear the original when it's mellow
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's a little simplicity to it.
I used to think it was too mellow at the time, but now I'm like, oh, it actually got cooler, I think, as time passed.
For you.
Shantae is
finally caught up to it.
Pipeline. Yeah, right? See what happens in 50 years? It's important to get old. It's good to get old, I think.
Maybe you go study and come back with a determination.
Right. Moving on from there, let's see. The Drifters, of course. Well, there's a band that everybody associates with the early 60s, and they've been in so many different forms. So many different lead singers, so many different styles that they had covered. This might be the definitive song, though, that came out under the name The Drifters. As far as American bands go, I mean, really, it might be a faceless band, but they are, by definition, one of the most important of the singing groups that came out of America. And on this track, some of the best songwriters of that era all got together. It was originally written, Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil were responsible for the basic composition, but Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller were doing the production, so then they added their two cents to the Mann Weil song. So you got a Mann Weil Lieber Stoller song.
Wow.
And just for good measure, Phil Spector happened to be hanging around in the studio that day, so he got involved and added his two cents as well. Kind of fairly obvious that this song was going to be almost impossible to miss with all of that going on.
Really?
And it didn't. It ended up charting quite well. In fact, on Broadway, name of the track, went to number 9. Another song about what it's like to make it in New York. Move over, Frank Sinatra. This is the original New York, New York, so to speak, called On Broadway.
They say the neon lights are bright on Broadway. They say the girls are something else on Broadway.
The Drifters on Broadway.
Drifted on down.
Don't I sound excited?
My.
No, actually, I love it. You know, just.
What's not to like about that?
That's. I. You know what it is. I guess the
Don't
thing is.
Don't be a hater.
I love it. I do love it. You know, the stuff being. That's one of the songs that I think I've heard so many times that it's like, oh, it's really hard to hear something new in it. Although it's still a great track. I'll say that. Maybe I should just say now that you are listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. We are here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 p.m. until 6. And what we are doing now is playing for you a bunch of tracks from the summer of 63. 50-year-old music. Incredible.
I'm glad I can say I wasn't alive yet. But I do know those songs.
No response from me.
That's how classic they were.
Absolutely. I completely agree. In fact, if you're liking this show, if you're into it, you know, we save all the stuff we posted on the internet. And right now, I've lost count, but I think that there are about, amazingly, I can say about 500 shows on our website right now. 500 hours of
many,
me talking about music. Could you, if you really want to basically ruin like an entire year of your life, you could go to our website and listen to the whole thing. Or you could just go find bits and pieces.
You're in quite the mood today.
Well, you know, the thing is, honestly, 500 shows, it's a bit much for anybody. It's such an amassed amount of stuff.
Well, how do you think I feel? I live with you.
I can imagine. I can imagine. But it's all there. It's got titles and it explains what's on it. And you could actually search through it and find some stuff that you might be interested in. And I'm proud of a lot of it, quite honestly. I'm sure it's a diverse collection of stuff. And I think you'd have a good time. If you want to just check it out, search for the URL is AmericanHitNetwork.com. Or just search on the show name, American Hit Radio. I'm sure with the first thing that'll come right up on your search. And check it out. Pick out whatever you want. The Wednesday show is on the left side of the homepage. The Friday show is on the right-hand side. There's a lot of stuff on that Friday show, which is really informative as well. So I think check it out. You might have some fun with it.
Something.
Despite my own opinions or my own negative attitude toward like doing this for so long.
I think
it's what it is. I think with the 1963 thing sinking in, I'm like, boy, this time is just flying. These songs are 50 years old. I've been doing this radio show now for who knows how many years. I don't even know. Don't want to remember. I'm happy to be doing it. Thank goodness we're still here. It's been a huge privilege.
Stop bad-mouthing yourself. Honestly.
Happy to be here. I'll leave it at that. Okay, let's play some jazz, because this is another type of music that was getting popular in 1963 before everything was kind of like happening in 63. There's a lot of cool stuff. Pretty much everything except rock and roll until the Beatles hit. There was a guy named Mongo Santa Maria. Actually, his name was Ramon, and his nickname was Mongo.
And Mongo.
Exactly. Really funny story about this, apparently. He was basically, I think he was a Cuban guy, played percussion. Very much in like that Afro-Cuban style, you know, big on the nightclub scene for a while, right? Now, he has a gig in the Bronx sometime a little bit before the show was recorded, probably late 1962. And as the story goes, he shows up at this job to play for the crowd, and like three people show up.
Uh-oh.
It's like only three people in the audience. So one of the guys who was like filling in on the gig was Herbie Hancock, really early. Herbie
wow.
Hancock. So Herbie Hancock sits behind the piano and he starts playing this blues pattern that he had written, saying, listen, there's nobody here. So since there was no audience, they threw away the set. They said, let's just jam on whatever Herbie's doing. So the band just sort of picked it up and started playing along with it. They eventually felt, this is pretty good. Let's go in and record it. That became a top 10 hit. You go from playing in a nightclub with nobody there to getting in the top 10. Not so bad. Here's Mongo Santa Maria with Watermelon Man.
Thank you.
Very cool. If eventually Herbie Hancock, by the way, would put out his own version a few years later, around the time of Headhunters. I think it was on the album Headhunters when he did it, when he released his own version. But that was the original hit there by Ramon Mango Santa Maria. Going back to the summer of 63.
That's one heck of a name, I tell you.
Now, we were talking about girl groups and how huge they were. Well, here's one of the most successful solo female vocalists of the pre-Beatles era. Definitely saddled with a reputation of being, being either immature or bratty because of the songs that she sang.
Okay.
So I think it's sort of, I feel bad for her in a sense, because I'm sure that she was like, you know, a very normal woman or person.
But, maybe.
But when you sing about, you know, Judy's Turn to Cry and You Don't Own Me and It's My Party and I'll Cry If I Want To, it all adds up to a certain perspective that you place on the artist.
Right.
Which is really, it's the song, not the person. So let's this was another number one hit from the summer of 63. Leslie Gore, and It's Her Party. Definitely one of the bigger songs from the girl group era. Leslie Gore, of course, from the summer of 1963 with It's My Party. It seems like you could say that it was like an innocent age, but it's not like when the Beatles hit in 64 that there was suddenly this lack of innocence. The Beatles really, I mean, what was not innocent about the early Beatles? You know, that stuff was most of their, not most, but a good percentage of the material that the Beatles were performing came from these girl groups.
So.
Yeah, they covered a lot of
these
songs, you know? So it's sort of the same thing, just from a different country. I mean, of course, it eventually changed. By the time you got to, say, Rubber Soul and everything, it began to change.
Yeah, when they started writing their own material.
But that's, you know, that's much further on. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that in the summer of 63, there seems to be, listening to the songs, and I don't know if I'm just making this up in my head, but you get this sense of anticipation, like something's coming. Something's changing.
Something's going to change.
Right. You just get that feeling. And of course, maybe it's because looking backward, it's impossible to not know that the Beatles are about to basically,
you
hit pay dirt.
You can't unknow.
Right, you can't unlearn it, you know? Like you can't unsee something or,
right.
You know, and it's very, I guess that's very much the case looking back at it from a historical perspective. Now, we're talking about girl groups, and Phil Spector was really the king of what was the music that was going out there for the girl groups. I mean, he wasn't responsible for all of it, but he sure was responsible for some of the best of it. The Ronettes were not happening at this point in time yet. His main charge were the Crystals. The thing is, he had two Crystals that he would basically have waging war against one another. The first Crystal came out, and they had a couple of hits. And then...
They were on the road, right?
Right. No, basically, they started questioning Phil Spector about his motives regarding what he was going to be doing with royalties and everything. He said, you know what? I don't know what to do. When they were out on the road, he just hired Darlene Love and the Blossoms to perform the next batch of songs that he had. So He's a Rebel and He's Sure the Boy I Love were released, recorded by Darlene Love and the Blossoms, but credited to the Crystals. So now it's Darlene Love's turn to say, thanks a lot. I don't even get credit. You don't even use my own band name.
Right.
I'm just pretending to be somebody else. So then he said, okay, then I don't need you either. So he called up the original Crystals again. And they were more than happy to come back. It was better than being dumped.
Right.
So he just, you think it was, sexist much?
Kind of. Just a wee bit.
Incredible that you could do this and get away with it. All Spector was concerned with was whether or not the song was, quote unquote, dumb enough. Figured if it's a girl group song, it's got to sound dumb, and the dumber the better.
Right, naive would probably be a better word.
Well, his phrase was dumb. He'd turn around and he'd ask the musicians, does it sound dumb enough to you? Is it dumb enough to be a hit?
Wow.
Written by Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Barry. It certainly, I'm not going to say if it was dumb enough, but it was certainly clever enough to be universally appealing because it was a huge hit for the Crystals. Number three, in fact. And maybe the title's pretty dumb. to do Ron Ron. Wow, to do Ron Ron. It's, this is like the days of AM radio. This is like when you would have your pillow under your transistor radio under your pillow listening to these songs. I mean, there was like.
It makes me wish I had one.
There wasn't hi-fi. There wasn't FM yet, It just really wasn't about. I remember I did have one of those little transistors. You had this, what do you call the square battery? I forget what they're called.
9-volt.
Yeah, the 9-volt. You got to stick
also
that thing on.
Also known as tongue burners.
Tongue burners.
Yeah, because that's how you tested them to see if they were still had some juice left.
Here in New York, you were probably tuned in to either 53, which, if I remember correctly, that was WMCA, or 77, WABC, ding. Take it. I remember that theme. And hearing these songs, especially at night, because the reception would be a lot better at night. So it was like, that's why everybody would hear all these stories about people putting their transistors under their pillows to listen to music. I did it because I was like 5 or 6, and it was such a cool thing to have, this little thing that could play music.
I thought you did it so that your parents wouldn't know that you were staying up past your bedtime.
Well, that too. That's the other reason. You basically, if you're putting it under the pillow and you push your ear against it, really nobody's going to hear it.
Including yourself.
I remember falling asleep. I had my cat, Bud, in bed, once I had my arm around him and the transistor radio under my ear, and hearing all these songs, and it just evoked such a magical world. I mean, it's so funny because in 1963, when you think about the images that were brought on by rock and roll, they were so evocative and romantic. And of course, over time, a lot of that, all of it maybe falls away. I don't know what it means to be in the music industry in 2013. I don't even know if you can call it, use those two words together. I think it's an oxymoron. In 2013, it's so much has changed. Like I said, the very thought of a bunch of like 50 some odd year olds, you know, making paunch rock, whatever you want to call it, you know, that couldn't have happened in 63. It was for young dreamers, really.
Yeah, vibrant people.
And you can hear that in the music for the most part. It's fairly obvious to me, fairly cool. And I'm saying that, though, right before this next track, again, you know, female vocalist, who I think, I find this song funny because, well, I'm about to play Barbara Lewis. That was her name. That was the name of the artist. The song is Hello Stranger. And she sort of sounds like a prototype for Sade, that style of music. Uh-huh. Like, it's very languid and cool. And the song, you know, Hello Stranger, if you listen to the lyrics, it's obviously she's meeting an ex-lover that she hasn't seen for a long time. But if you listen to the way she sings the words, she doesn't sound very excited about it. It doesn't not only sound like, not only is she not excited, it sounds like she didn't even get up. It almost sounds like she's in a hospital bed and the guy came in to visit her because he heard the bad news. And she's lying there going, oh, hello, how have you been? So it takes
sweet.
Really, it's just so weird to me. It takes like laid back to the point where it's almost, I mean, either it's sexy on one hand, like a Sade thing, or on the other hand, you could easily envision as she's singing the song that she's wearing, you know, hospital slippers and holding one of those intravenous stands.
Oh, dear.
Here's Barbara Lewis with Hello Stranger.
Hello, stranger. It seems so good to see you back again. How long has it been?
It seems like a mighty long time. Chuba-chuba, my baby, ooh.
It seems like a mighty long time. Oh, I'm so glad you stopped by to say hello to me. Remember, that's the way it used to be.
It seems like a mighty long time. Chubop, chubop, my baby, ooh. It seems like a mighty long time. Chubop, chubop, my baby. Chubop, chubop, my baby. Chubop, chubop, my baby. Chubop, chubop, my baby.
Chubop, chubop,
my baby. Chubop, chubop, my baby.
Oh, if you're not gonna stay, please don't tease me like you did before, because I still love you so, although it seems like a mighty long time. Chubop, chubop, my baby, ooh.
It seems like a mighty long time.
So what do you think, sexy or sickly?
I think she's just being languid and keeping her cool. She doesn't want to seem too excited.
Too excited. It's just
to
yeah,
see the guy.
I definitely get that. And I love the song. I mean, it's an awesome song, and I love the way that she sings it. It's just that once I got that image of, like, you know, maybe she's not well.
You get the TB sheets.
Right, right. I couldn't get that out of my head. It's just like, oh, yeah, exactly like that. Well, 1963, let's see, Sam Cooke, his career started with a bang in 1957. By 1963, he's still going strong. An old friend of the show just called up, Pete, and he was just saying, you know, what do you think music would have been like if the Beatles did not hit in America? And, of course, that would depend, you know, to answer that correctly, it's hypothetical, of course, and it depends on so many different factors. Like, what if then Sam Cooke wasn't killed under those crazy circumstances? Because it's very possible that Sam Cooke could have become the next big thing. And because by 1963, he was still way at the top of his game and still going strong into 64 when, you know, basically on that weird, crazy, fateful day when he got shot in a motel by the manager because somebody had stolen his clothes. And he came downstairs to say, you know, somebody just stole my clothes. And the manager, seeing a naked black man yelling about his clothes being stolen, didn't wait to ask questions. Just pulled the trigger. Bizarre. Crazy. Horrible. Weird way for somebody as talented and as handsome and as, you know, as cool and hip and vibrant and full of energy as Sam Cooke. It's hard to even fathom any of this, but in 1963, like I said, you know, he's basically at the top of his game, having tons of fun with pop music. He's had that awesome gospel, you know, inflected voice. He came out of the Soul Stirrers, that was his past, and he could do anything vocally. This guy, probably really one of the best singers to have ever lived, to have ever recorded a pop song. Here he is with another Saturday Night.
Another Saturday Night. Seen a lot of girls assisting. If I could meet them, I could get them. But as yet, I haven't met them. That's why I'm in the shape I'm in. Here another Saturday night, and I ain't got nobody. I got some money, cause I just got paid. Now, how I wish I had someone to talk to. I'm in an awful way. Now, another fella told me sister who looked just fine. Instead of being my deliverance, she had a strange resemblance to a cat named Frankenstein. Here another Saturday night, and I ain't got nobody. I got some money, cause I just got paid. Now how I wish I had some shit to talk to. I'm in an awful way, yeah. It is another weekend. Man, if I was back home, I'd be swinging two chicks on my arm. Oh, yeah. Listen to me, huh? It's hard on a fella when he don't know his way around. If I don't find me a honey to help me spend my money, I'm gonna have to blow this town. Here it's another Saturday night, and I ain't got nobody. I got some money, cause I just got paid. Now how I wish I had some chick to talk to. I'm in an awful. Everybody sang another Saturday night, and I ain't got nobody. I got some money, cause I just got paid. Now how I wish I had someone to talk to. I'm in an awful. One more time, another Saturday.
Wow. Sam Cooke, of course, the great, late, great Sam Cooke with another Saturday Night, playing our way through hits from the summer of 1963, 50 years ago. And up to this point, I've been picking songs that I would still be more than happy to play at any point in time. Contemporary.
That sounds ominous.
I love all these songs. I just haven't played a single. Yeah, up until now. That's the ominous part. Because I want to play a great miss. I want to squeeze one in before we go. I am a fan of the Four Seasons, too. I'm one of those sort of a closet fan. You don't want to really admit it because they were never really a particularly cool band. But they had their fair share of great hits. You know, The Big Girls Don't Cry, Walk Like a Man, whatever. You know, Dawn, Rag Doll. Let's Hang On. But they also had a couple of really dopey songs. And one of the dumbest things I think that they could have done, I don't know why they would think it would be a good idea for them to do a cover version of Ain't That a Shame, Fats Domino's tune. but they did, and they released it. And it went almost top 20. It went to number 22
wow.
on the pop charts, which is a real shame. So let's play this as a great miss or a bad hit, depending on your perspective. Here's the Four Seasons totally destroying. excuse me, Ain't That a Shame. That song is just silly, isn't it?
It's goofy.
Four Seasons doing Ain't That a Shame. That is a shame.
Shame on you.
We'll be back. We'll follow this up. I'm going to cover a few more hits from 63 because I got a bunch more from this era. Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, more Crystals, Beach Boys, Major Lance, more Marvin Gaye. So we'll do this again. On the next Wednesday in our future when we can get in here. But we're going to leave you with a track by James Brown from 1963. And I'm loving this because we all know what James Brown became. The guy, you know, the one chord wonder who would get into a groove and just make your spine fall out. It was so incredibly, you know, hot. But he was actually, I mean, this is a guy. Here he is singing a song that dates back to 1932. It's a crooning song. And he sounds so fantastic when he sings it. He just proves that he wasn't just like a soul, you know, play it how you feel it guy.
He wasn't a one-trick pony.
No, he was a fantastic interpretive artist. I love this version. This is my favorite version of Prisoner of Love recorded by anybody. Imagine if you haven't heard it, you're in for a treat. So take care, everyone. Have a great week, and hopefully you can join us again on Friday as we begin our series dedicated to the music of the Rolling Stones. Woo! Show number one for the Stones on Friday at 5 p.m. See you then, everyone. Take care.
I need no shackles to remind me. I'm just a prisoner. Don't let me be a prisoner. From what command I stand and wait now. From what the master of mine fade now. It's too late now. I'm just a prisoner. Don't let me be a prisoner. What's the good of my caring if someone's sharing those arms, but not with me. Although she has another, and I can't have another, for I'm not a free. She's in my dreams away, I'm sleeping. Upon my knees to her, I'm creeping.